I'm an occupational therapist by background, but I'm currently with an improvement advisor working with Living Well in Communities. That's part of Healthcare Improvement Scotland. So my job at the minute is to manage two programmes, Falls and Frailty and Intermediate Care Enablement. So what I do is I go out and I support local partnerships around Scotland to look at improvement work around Falls and Frailty and Intermediate Care Enablement. So I'll give you an example of the work that I'm doing at the minute. Working with the Scottish Ambulance Service, looking at the falls pathway, that if someone calls 999 and they're found to have fallen and the paramedic goes out, looking at alternative routes to taking that person to hospital if they're not injured. So that's involving the whole multidisciplinary team. It's involving social care. It's involving other agencies as well. So my job is to try and make that pathway a lot slicker and work with the different partnerships to make that happen on the ground. So that's what I'm doing at the minute, but my background is OT. I'm Falls Forum Lead for the College of Occupational Therapists, specialist section for older people, and I was involved in writing the OT guidelines in Falls, so that's why I'm here today. With the exception of the paediatric placement, all of you should be following the OT Falls guidelines in the area of work that you're working in. So if you're seeing anybody who has a long-term condition, that's got mental health issues, is in a physical placement, social work, anywhere at all, you should be considering Falls as part of your holistic OT assessment. So there's quite a lot of you here all doing that at the minute. So if Falls isn't on the radar in your placement, you can go back and say about the wonderful day that you've had here today and that really raise the profile of the OT Falls guidelines within the practice that's there. Okay, so why do Falls matter? Well, you'll have seen from the modules that you've done that we've got an ageing population, and we know that 1 in 3 over the age of 65 will fall in a year. But that's the tip of the iceberg, because these are the people that are actually reporting the falls that they're having. We know that there's links, for example, with mental health in terms of people who have falls, where there's cognitive decline. If somebody's got maybe Alzheimer's disease, their reactions are different, their risk taking's different. So there's lots of reasons why they perhaps fall. Elaine Hunter, that's working at Alzheimer's Scotland, have you met her at all?
No.
So she's an OT and she's the AHP lead for Alzheimer's Scotland, and we've been looking at how we can link falls and dementia together. And there's been a few blogs about that on the Alzheimer's Scotland website, so you might want to have a wee look, a look at that. So what has happened in Scotland is we've had the up and about pathway, and again, you would have seen some of the information about that when you looked at the modules online. What that pathway says is that there's kind of 4 stages that we should be looking at in terms of supporting people who have had a fall or at risk of falling. Stage 1 is that yellow box there, and that's about supporting active ageing, health improvement and self-management. And what I say to everybody when we do this is, ideally, we want everybody to be in this yellow box. That's where we're striving to be, is in this yellow box. It's all about healthy active ageing and people remaining as independent as they possibly can be. So when you're working with someone, that's what you're striving to do, is get them to this yellow box wherever possible. Stage 2 is about identifying anybody that's at risk of falling or fragility fractures. So have any of you had a conversation with the people that you're working with, the patients that you've got, if they've had any falls in the last year? Have you been doing that as part? Great, that's good, because that's what you should be doing. If you're not doing that as part of your placement, that is a prerequisite of the OT guidelines, and the OTs that you're working with really need to be looking to think about how they can weave that conversation into their assessments. Stage 3 is about responding to an individual who's just fallen and what that immediate response is like. So we've done some work on that in the care homes, about how do the care home staff respond to that first fall, and how do they support somebody that's just had that fall. And there's the guidelines for care homes about managing falls and fractures. So you might want to have a look at them before you go out on placement. And also the work that we're doing with the ambulance service at the minute. So that's looking at how the paramedics in particular respond to falls, but what can we do to stop that 999 call happening in the first place? So you'll maybe hear with the new health and social care integration, we're talking about single point of access, where in the community there'll be one phone number that people phone into, and then they can access services from there. And that might be the patient phoning in themselves, or that might be about other services wanting to talk to one another about making referrals. And that's part of this responding when an individual's just fallen. There's other work going on around NHS 24 at the minute to look at how can we tap somebody in when they phone up. They've maybe had a fall and they're not managing functionally after that fall. How can we tap them into an OT in their local area so that they can get an assessment done quickly with regards to their function? So at the minute we've got the National Falls Programme, and we have a National Falls Programme lead, and her name's Anne Murray. We also have falls leads within the 32 partnerships across Scotland, and what they do is they support local work that's going on in these areas. There are many of the falls leads who are actually occupational therapists by background. Some are physios and others are nursing. Quite a mix, but there is a few there that are OTs. We also have the ALIP programme. I don't know if any of you have heard of that at all, but what that is, it's the Active Independent Living Improvement Programme, and that is the AHP programme that's running at a national level. So Jackie Lundy-Johnson, who's the Chief Health Professions Officer for Scotland, also OT by background, is leading on that programme of work. And there's lots of work streams to that. One is mental health, there's children and young people, but there's also the Falls programme that sits within that. And we've got Living Well in Communities, which is where I'm based. And what we do is we, as I've said, support local partnerships with different improvement work that's going on, particularly around older people. So my work's around intermediate care enablement and falls and frailty, but we're also doing work around palliative care, anticipatory care planning, and various other streams of work too. So we know that there's an evidence base around falls, and that's where the OT falls guidelines have come from, and Dawn's going to speak to you more about that later on today. There's also some other work for those of you that are in a hospital setting. You've got the patient safety programme that's been going for some time now, and that looks at particularly people who are in hospital and the risk of falls that they have within the context of the environment of a hospital setting. So this is the hospital standards, and within that there's some information there around about what you should be doing in terms of identifying falls risk. It all fits with that coloured pathway that I showed you at the beginning. There's also the CAS standards for hospitals as well, and that's the Care Assurance Standards, and that's for acute and GP hospitals. And what you'll see here is they've developed this bundle that all patients that are coming into hospital are reliably risk assessed for falls, and there's evidence that falls risk assessment's taking place. So again, it fits in with that pathway that I've shown you at the beginning. So in terms of the different stages, what can be done? So there's lots of work being done over the last wee while to think about how do we provide easy to access information to people about staying well, falls prevention and bone health. And Dawn and I were involved a wee while ago in this Up and About booklet that's been developed through Age Scotland and the National Osteoporosis Society and NHS Scotland. And that gives people information about taking positive steps to avoid trips and falls. Anybody who's had a fall should be given one of these information leaflets as part of their treatment programme, and we're encouraging as many people as possible to be providing that information. What some areas have done as well is made that into an education programme as well, so they have sessions about the different aspects within that, so about staying active, about looking after your eyes, all the different parts to that. They run sessions on these different things. There's also the Living It Up platform. We're in an age of technology, so people like to flick in their iPad and Google everything. So to be able to give people a different format other than just written text, there's this Living It Up platform, and you can go on and there and do a falls assessment, your own assessment of where you think you are in terms, and it gives you information and advice on practical things that you could do if you've had a fall or you're at risk of falling. There's an exercise centre on there, and again I think your videos are on there, Dawn, as well. So they all link together, and the NHS and forum web pages where there's information about falls and keeping well. Stage two is about having a conversation with people and identifying if they're at risk of falling. So we want to be asking people, have they had a fall? The national guidance is a year. This is the Lanarkshire questions that are asked, or the conversation that takes place in Lanarkshire, and we ask if they've had a fall within the last 6 months. We want to know if somebody's had difficulty with their gait or their balance, if they've got any unsteadiness in their feet, if there's any blackouts or dizziness, if they've got any difficulties carrying out their activities of daily living since they fell, are they worried about falling again, and were they able to get up from the floor okay? So reason for this is you're wanting to find out if somebody's had multiple falls. So that's one of the things that we want to know. Is this a one-off occasion, or has it been multiple falls that somebody's had? If they're unsteady on their feet, is this a new thing, or is this a long-standing issue that they've been unsteady on their feet? And how is their gait or their balance when you've observed them? Did they experience any blackout or dizziness or lightheadedness? That's a real red flag if somebody's telling you that they've had dizziness or lightheadedness, or they've blacked out when they've fallen. There's often something underlying that's happening with this. Now, some of you have said you're in medical placements and cardiology placements as well. That would sometimes be a typical pattern for somebody that, if they're blacking out, that there's maybe a cardiac issue around about the falls that they're having. So these falls really need to be investigated. So they need to, if you're working in community, the person needs to go back to their GP and have a discussion with them about the blackouts and the dizziness and lightheadedness that they're having. If you're working in a hospital context, you need to be having a conversation with your consultants on the wards to let them know that somebody's reported that. That might not be what they're in with, but we want to have a look at that as part of their overall treatment programme when they're in, or their investigations. Difficulty carrying out ADL tasks, their activities since they fell. We know that people do avoid activity after they've had a fall. It's really quite significant, and that can be linked in sometimes with fear of falling, but it might also be around the injuries that they've sustained when they've had a fall. So we really need to try and, as quickly as possible, encourage people to regain the abilities that they've had before. And link that in with their strength and balance. We've had this conversation before, to make sure that physically that they're able to cope with their activities of daily living as well as possible. Fear of falling is a huge issue. From the information that you would have got in the modules, you would see that there's quite a high proportion of people. It's about 50%. Who've never actually fallen before are frightened of falling. And that has a kind of vicious circle, if you like. If somebody's frightened of falling, they'll avoid doing the things that they would normally do. On a day like today, you might find that somebody might avoid going out because they think that it's too wet or slippy outside. They just have a look out the window and think, I'm not going to bother going out because I'm too frightened that I'm actually going to fall. If that happens, if you think of our winters and our weather in Scotland, we don't have very many sunny days or good days where you can get out and about. You then start to limit the distance that you're walking, and that then has an impact on your function, particularly around the house, and particularly on your strength and your balance. So it's that whole kind of vicious circle. There's also the social isolation of somebody, and you'll see the campaigns just now about trying to decrease loneliness for people who are living on their own at home. And again, if somebody's had a fall, that might lead to social isolation and loneliness because they don't want to go out and do the same things that they've done, or they might be embarrassed that if they go out they might land on the floor somewhere in front of their friends. So what we've got here in this triangle is the different levels of assessment and what actually happens in terms of this pathway. So what you see here in terms of this conversation is what we call a basic falls risk screen. So what we would say is anybody can have that conversation with somebody about the falls that we're having. And in a few areas in Scotland, we've moved to that conversation be between families and about people being able to self-refer into services to look at a level 2 assessment where they would have a multifactorial risk assessment completed. So if somebody answers yes to any of the questions here, if they're unsteady in their feet, they've had a fall, any of the other things here, that tells us that that person needs a further assessment. And that might be done at that particular time. So if you were working with someone and as part of your initial contact, you ask them about the falls they were having, you might then go on and complete that multifactorial risk assessment with them. That assessment might take place by someone else, depending on the context of where you're working. And you also have a level 3, and that would be a specialist assessment, perhaps at falls clinic or with a specialist falls team. And the way that works is different in different areas across the country. So it might take place at a day hospital setting, or it might be within an acute hospital where somebody would come in and have a multidisciplinary assessment by the whole team at the one time. In Lanarkshire, what they do there is they would go out and visit the person at home that requires the level 3, and it's the OT, physio or nurse that would go out and review them at home initially. And if they required a medical assessment, they would then talk to the consultant in the local area and invite them along to our medical clinic. We've spoken about rapid response and long lie. So what we mean by a long lie is if somebody's on the floor for over an hour. We know that if somebody's on the floor for over an hour, their recovery decreases and their rehabilitation potential is lessened by the longer they are on the floor. So it's really crucial if we can get people up off the floor as quickly as possible. So some of the work that I've been involved in is about how we actually get somebody to summon help. So when you're out and about and you're working with people in the community, have you ever asked them about how they would summon help if they've had a fall? That should be part of your assessment that you're doing and your intervention. How are they going to manage to get that help? If they've got a community alarm in the house, which is this button here, have they ever used it? And would they use it in the event of an emergency? Because some people will tell you that they've got it, but they wouldn't actually like to press it because they wouldn't like to bother anybody. If they've got the alarm, are they wearing it? And if they're not wearing it, why are they not wearing it? from years of experience, I've found that lots of people don't like it on that cord. They prefer it in a wrist strap, so wearing it like a watch, and you can actually change this this bit here over onto a wrist strap, and that changes their compliance with that piece of kit. So it's having that conversation with somebody and getting to know why they wouldn't do that. And that could be really critical for them during an episode where they've had a fall. The other thing is if somebody has cognitive impairment, so somebody, for example, who has Alzheimer's disease, they might not be able to summon help. They might not remember to press that alarm. So thinking, what's the alternative for them? And there's lots of assistive technology out there that could be used to help to summon help if somebody has a fall. For example, it might be a falls detector. So again, that might be a watch or a strap. And what would happen is that individual wouldn't have to press a button to summon help. The minute that they landed on the floor, it would detect that sudden change in movement, and that would be the automatic trigger for a response. There's other things, for example, bed monitors that you get. So if you've got somebody that's living on their own at home and they're up and down to the toilet during the night, what you could do is they could look at having a bed monitor on their bed with a timer attached. So it might well be that when they go to the toilet, you set it for half an hour. If they're not back in bed within that half hour, then that raises an alarm to let somebody know that they're not back in bed and they may have fallen and they need to be checked on at that particular time. We've found that really beneficial, where we've had scenarios where you've had carers. I can give you one example in particular. A husband and wife, they slept in the same double bed, and the husband had a hearing impairment, so he took his hearing aids out at night and he couldn't hear a thing. He was often getting up in the morning, and his wife, who had Alzheimer's disease, was found lying on the floor. She was getting up to go to the toilet during the night, forgetting to take her Zimmer with her, and was often found on the floor. What we did there was we put the bed monitor on, and we had a vibrating pillow system. So when she moved off the bed, that vibration happened underneath the husband's pillow, and he was then able to know that she was up and on the move. He would go round, prompt her to use her Zimmer, and she would go through to the toilet. No more falls. So that really was useful in that scenario. The other situation we've had was a husband and wife who slept in separate bedrooms. Husband was getting up to go to the toilet during the night and was often blacking out. He was being investigated for that, so they were in the process of doing all the medical investigations to get to the root of that. He didn't want his wife to be helping him to the toilet at night. He wanted to keep doing that himself. So what we looked at was the timer being on, and if he wasn't in bed within half an hour, then that would raise an alarm, and there was a buzzer system in her room that would go off to let her know that he wasn't back in bed. And that reduced carer stress for that lady, because she was spending most of her night awake because she was terrified he was going to get up and go and he was going to black out and she would find him lying on the floor. So that's some examples of how the technology might help in terms of responding when somebody's on the floor. Stage 4 is about identifying and minimising the risk. And what we're going to do in a wee while is go through this multifactorial risk assessment, which has got all the different risk factors on it. And what we've done is we've given you 2 examples. You'll get both away, but we'll get you to work on different case scenarios. And that'll just let you have a run through of what all the different risk factors are and what the consideration should be for each intervention. We've got one here for somebody living in their own home, and we've also got one here for the care homes, which is part of the managing falls resource that I've spoken about. What I would say is that there'll be things on here that are within your gift as an occupational therapist to do something about. But the idea of this tool is that, for example, if it's about considering lying and standing blood pressure and you're not trained to be able to do that, then you would find somebody else that can do that. So it's about signposting on and considering all the options for that particular individual. It's just to see that as you're going along. So in terms of the falls prevention and management, we need you as new OTs coming through to be making sure that you're delivering the OT guidelines in practice. So have any of you managed to have a look at the OT guidelines at all in terms of falls? So there's some key recommendation areas in terms of the guidance, and what you've got within the handouts that we've given you is a quick reference guide to that as well, so that makes it easier for you to have that to hand when you're out and about. So there's three main recommendation areas: keeping safe at home and reducing the risk of falls, keeping active and reducing fear of falling, and falls management, making it meaningful to the individual. So in terms of the keeping safe at home and reducing the risk of falls, if you have a conversation with someone around falls and they're identified as being at risk of falling or have had a fall, then it's recommended that they should have a home hazard assessment as part of their intervention. And what we've found from the evidence is that can significantly reduce the risk of further falls. And they've done lots of different studies on this, and they've found that if that's completed by an occupational therapist, then the falls risk decreases more significantly than it does by other people completing a home hazard assessment. So it's really important that as an OT you're involved within a home hazard assessment. There's some key areas where the evidence is really strong around this, and one of the other recommendations is that should be offered to somebody who has a visual impairment. So if you're working in an older people's service where you have somebody with a visual impairment and they're either at risk of falling or have had falls, then they should have a home hazard assessment. If you're working in the hospital, then it would be thinking about how can that actually take place when that person goes home, because it's really important that we follow that up. And that might be about involving the community rehab team within the context of that particular individual, or it might be about linking in with social work if they've got an allocated OT there. So thinking about how, because it might well be that as an acute OT, you wouldn't be able to deliver that yourself. The occupational therapist should consider carrying out pre or post discharge home assessments to reduce the risk of falls following a discharge. And again, there's some evidence around the fact that when somebody returns home, so thinking about your orthopaedic examples, when somebody goes home after a period of admission to hospital, if they've had a pre or a post discharge home assessment, then their likelihood of a further fall is significantly decreased. So there's strong evidence there to suggest that as part of that discharge planning, that visit should be incorporated within the discharge. And again, it's about thinking who's going to be appropriately placed to be able to do that. The other part of the sort of advice about keeping safe at home is about occupational therapists should offer service users who are living in the community advice and instruction, information on assistive devices as part of their home hazard assessment. So that's thinking about any aids or adaptations that could be made to help support that individual at home. What I would say from the number of years that I've worked in falls services and I've worked with patients, it's really important to really consider how strength and balance impacts on a person's function, and perhaps look at a rehabilitative approach to transfers, for example, at the beginning, rather than diving in there with equipment to start off with. It might well be, for example, that rather than putting chair raisers on somebody's chair, if you encourage them to do sit to stands, for example, and they do that over a period of time, that their muscle strength will improve, and that will then help support them to be able to get up and down from the chair. But then there's a knock-on effect of that, of them managing the stairs, of transferring in and out of bed, getting on and off the toilet, and all the other bits and pieces. So it's really important not to just think about the context of the guidelines being about providing equipment. It's really about how you make the situation meaningful for that individual, and is there anything we can do that will help with their strength and balance. And if you go back to the kind of yellow slide, if we go back to this yellow slide, and about supporting active ageing, health improvement and self-management, when you're out there as an occupational therapist, at the back of your mind, keep this in mind, because what you do when you're out visiting somebody has an impact on them, their healthy active ageing in the longer term. So if you go in there and you do the quick fix of the providing a grab rail or raising a seat, that might be a quick fix, but in the longer term it might be more beneficial for them to think about their strength and balance and improving their function in that way. So it's important to think about that within the context of your treatment plan. Dawn's going to go into that in a wee bit more detail later on. So the next aspect recommendation of the guidelines is round about fear of falling. And there is an integral link between fear and activity levels. And you'll see a lot in the press and also like sort of in the technology that we have now. I got this new watch for my Christmas and it keeps telling me that I need to stand every so often and keep moving around. So activity is really important to keep your function levels high. And there's also a link to that in terms of confidence. So the more active you are, the more confident you become in terms of moving around. But it's taken that first step for some people to be able to get over their fear, particularly if they've had a nasty fall. So our role as occupational therapists is to try and think how we can best build that person's confidence back up, and how we can really support them to make good gains in terms of their function. So although we think that reducing the number of falls might be a key outcome for falls prevention, if we don't consider the fear of falling within this context, we might never go back to that yellow box, and we keep going back to this yellow box of supporting healthy active ageing. So we really need to address the fear of falling as well as the physical components of somebody's falls as we're working with individuals. So what the guidelines say is that as part of our intervention, we should be exploring service users' fear of falling and what may be restricting their activity. As part of my OT assessment, what I used to use was a falls efficacy scale. And what that did was it allowed a discussion with a patient about the different activities that they might do, and how confident they were doing those activities. And that then let me gauge, because on observation, what you might see is that somebody's quite capable physically of doing a certain task, but they're terrified of actually doing that particular task. Also, in the scenario where somebody has cognitive impairment, it might well be that you've observed that they're really at risk doing a particular task, but they're rating that they're super confident doing that particular task. So it let you get a gauge for where that individual was in terms of their perceived efficacy, but it also helped to marry up where your treatment focus might be and how you can help them overcome their fear of falling and what tasks you might need to concentrate on for that particular individual and whether that task was particularly important to them or not. But also as well, in terms of people who had perhaps cognitive impairment, it might help you focus on where you might have to encourage them with positive risk taking, so and give them coping strategies to deal with different tasks. I can give you an example of that, pertinent to somebody who had dementia and they kept falling on the stairs at home, and they were really keen not to have any supervision to do that. They wanted to remain as independent as they possibly could. We went in and we tried to do a bit of rehab with them, and what was happening was they were falling on the turn of their stair, and the way the turn was, the treads of the stair narrowed right down, and what they were doing through force of habit was always walking on the narrowest part of the stairs. We tried to do a bit of stair practice with them, and we went in and we said to them, you really need to walk on the widest part of the stair, so when you're going up and down the stair, let's walk on that side. That wouldn't work for that individual. They couldn't retain the information that when I'm going down the stairs, I really need to keep walking on the widest part of the stair. What we ended up doing was we decided that if we put a rail on the stair, which was a twisting rail on that side, what that then did was it moved them over slightly so that they weren't actually walking on that part of the stairs and they had a handle to hold on to as they went down. And we ended up, that person had no more falls. They had, and it was purely by working out with that particular individual about their risks and about how that impacted. They weren't frightened of falling in that particular... They didn't perceive that as a risk. They had no fear on that particular aspect, but obviously that's where all the falls were happening and it was a significant risk. And that's where all your different aspects and recommendations of the OT falls guidelines marry up together. We should be listening to the subjective views about the person's falls risk along with their objective views, and hopefully that's a good example of how we've been able to do that in that scenario. That we should be seeking ways to enable service users to minimise their risk of falling when performing activities, but wherever possible to improve their confidence and realistic risk taking. What we've turned into is a safety culture in a lot of ways, and what we do is to avoid people falling, we tell them not to move. It's the worst thing in the world that we can possibly do. We need to be keeping people as active and independent as possible. And again, it all links back to that yellow box at the beginning that about keeping people healthy and active. So when we're working as occupational therapists, we really need to be thinking about what can we do that makes this a positive risk for this individual, and how can we keep encouraging them to do certain tasks without putting them at any harm. And it might just be that about changing ways that they do something slightly, or introducing different techniques. Occupational therapists should facilitate caregivers, family and friends to adopt a positive approach to risk as well. One of the best examples of that I can give you is care homes. That's a really good example of where they're governed by care inspectorate, and sometimes when somebody's identified as being at risk of falling, perhaps the approach to that might be to make sure that they're sitting at all times, or that they're kept in bed, or whatever that plan might be. But what we want to try and do is keep that person moving as much as we can, because again, it's all the side effects of that immobility. So what we've looked at within a care home setting is a thing called active resident care. And what we've found is that's a really positive approach to risk taking. So for example, you look at what a person's habits are during the day. And if they like to get up and go for a walk at 10 o'clock, well, you support them to do that. If they're not able to get up and do that themselves, then you have a carer goes in at 10 o'clock and they take them on that walk, and that's supervised. And that's about positive risk taking, about allowing that person to be able to do that task, but within a supported way. So it's really important that we think about that. Carers are terrified that their relatives are going to fall, because worst case scenario, and you'll know this from the work you're doing around fractures, they'll have a hip fracture, and the mortality rate and the recovery rate after a hip fracture is really significant. So we want to try and avoid that. So you want to try and work with carers so that they're confident as well as the person themselves, that it's okay for that person to get up every half hour and go and have a wee look out the window or be moving around, and that we've put other things in place. For example, their falls detector or their alarm, that if in that event that they should fall, they've got options to summon help. It's really important to get the caregivers involved in all these decisions. Making it meaningful for the individual. The best way to work in terms of the falls prevention and management is to consider what the person's motivations, belief and knowledge are around their own function. And the key messages that should be incorporated into falls prevention and management interventions is to focus on the potential benefits to the individual to improve their mobility, their independence and their active participation. So what matters to that person in terms of their everyday life? What is it that matters to them in terms of their function? How can we, through our strength and balance work, through our reducing fear of falling, how can we support them to be able to do whatever it is that matters to them? And that's what this recommendation's all about, is about how you possibly make it meaningful to that individual. So in terms of making it meaningful, there's a different sort of sections here. So we should be sharing knowledge and understanding of falls prevention and management strategies with service users. And this is about providing the relevant information. So I showed you at the beginning phase one of the recommendations, where there's the information here about how to take positive steps to avoid trips and falls. So it might be about you as an OT discussing this with your patients that you're working with. It might be about having a group setting where you invite some falls patients along and you have that whole conversation with one another around falls and what you can do to live a healthy, active life. It might be about signposting them to the Living It Up web pages or NHS and forum. So any way that you can to support that individual with their falls prevention and management. I've lost it. So, and that we should be supporting the engagement of the service user to identify the positive benefits of falls intervention. So if we just go into somebody's house and we say to them, we think we should lift those rugs up because they're a trip hazard, then do you think the person's likely to do it? Probably not. But if we say to them that The reason we want them to do that is because it'll affect their gait and their balance and give them a bit more of the understanding as to why it is, then they might be more inclined to think about doing that. So it's about making sure that the messages are positive, and it's not just about going in there and say, we need to take that rug up that you've had there for 30 years. It's about getting the messages around about why that's important for that particular individual. So in terms of the guidelines, they are online. If any of you haven't had a look at them, what you've got on the College of OT website is a quick reference guide, which is the copy that you've got there. There's also the audit tool, which we're going to have a look at, and there's a false CPD session as well. There's a feedback forum, so if any of you that are on placement wanted to deliver the CPD session as part of your placement to other OTs that are there, then what you could do is evaluate that at the end and send the feedback form into the College of OT to say how you found that and what you might do differently the next time or how they could improve that. They're actually looking at it at the minute, so if you wanted to send any feedback in, that would be beneficial. The audit tool, if you can just quickly have a wee look at the audit tool that you've got there. So if you maybe just want to take a wee minute and have a wee look at the audit tool, if you maybe just want to look at the different questions on there, as you're all on placement at the minute, it might be a good idea to think about the placement that you're on at the minute. If you could spend a couple of minutes just having a look on your own and think about your own placement, what is the current practice there in terms of service users who have fallen or at risk of falling should be offered an OT-led home hazard assessment, including follow-up to optimise functional activity. So if you think about that question one, is that something that's happening on your placement at the minute? Or is that something that needs to be reviewed? If you want to go through the and just have a look and see what are the areas that are going well for the placement that you're on, or for those of you that are not been out yet on placement, if you think about one that you've maybe done before, have a wee think about that, and then maybe spend a couple of minutes, once you've had a look at it, chatting to your neighbour and just discussing what the current practice is and any of the gaps that you think there is in terms of the placements that you're on at the minute.